He was wearing khakis. He stood up. I walked over. I extended my hand and I said, "Mr. McVeigh, my name is Stephen Jones. I'm a lawyer in Enid, Oklahoma. I've been appointed to represent you." He shook my hand and looked me in the eye and he said, "I heard you were coming." The marshals and the warden were withdrawn at that time, and I think my first question to him was, "Well, tell me a little bit about yourself." We talked maybe 20 minutes, and I said, "I'll be back tomorrow."
And how did he strike you?
He looked much different. I was surprised. His face was friendly, was outgoing. Tim was a slender person, tall, but he didn't seem as tall as the videos of him coming out of the courthouse at Perry. He was not aloof. He was very open, and I didn't believe him as I listened. But when I met with him the next day, I believe it was, I spent a long period of time there. I just let him talk. I said, "Why don't you start wherever you want to?"
You didn't believe him from the first day?
I was skeptical.
Of his story of how this happened?
Yes.
He was a veteran of the Gulf War. What would you say was his political profile? Did he explain that to you at the outset, his ideology?
Yes. He quoted the Declaration of Independence. He could quote it verbatim in large portion. I listened to him. And then he explained to me very candidly and forthrightly his views on the federal government, the Brady Bill, gun control, and what had happened at the Branch Davidians outside Waco. I listened to him. He did not refer to himself as a martyr. He did refer to himself as a terrorist. He explained that he thought it was justified.
What was justified?
The bombing. And he explained how he did it. Went into enormous detail about the bomb. And as he was explaining it to me, I had kind of this mental image of people falling. I could see the victims falling in the Murrah building as it collapsed. Because, of course, what kills most people is not the bomb. It's the trauma of the building falling, the steel and the concrete and so forth, the weight and the pressure. I mean, certainly the blast kills some people, but it's really the effect of the blast that does it. I didn't interrupt him. I listened very carefully. I'm sure, as I've said, I went to the restroom or had something to drink or lunch. I honestly don't remember it. I just remember listening to him. I didn't take any notes.
So he's telling you he did it?
He did.
And you didn't believe him?
I was skeptical.
Why?
First of all, I practiced law for 43 years, at that time 25 years, I guess. And experience has taught me that clients often in violent crimes do not tell you the truth at the beginning. This was outside my experience. Also, I just sort of instinctively knew that it was not a one-man operation. Now, objectively, I didn't have any evidence that he was not telling me the truth until about 2 weeks later, when I read this story that took up a full page in USA Today, written by a very good reporter, a man that I came to respect, well, respected the story and respected him for the rest of it. He was a straight shooter. And I went down to talk to Tim, and I said, "You told me that Michael and Lori Fortier didn't have anything to do with this."
We should say they lived in Arizona.
Yes, they lived in Kingman, Arizona. Michael and Tim had been Army buddies. He said, "That's right." I said, "Well, if they didn't have anything to do with it, then why is the government giving them immunity? I mean, the government doesn't casually give immunity. They give immunity when you know something, and when, if you said anything, it would incriminate you." So he told me a lot about Mike and Lori then. I said, "Well, then why did you lie to me?" He said, "Well, I didn't trust you." But he said, "I know the defense now, and I know you, and we're working together." So I said, "So I can count on what you're going to tell me?" He said, "Yes." I said, "Okay." Well, about 10 days after that, I get a telephone call from a reporter, I think for the Detroit News, either the News or the Free Press. And he introduced himself, and he said, "I'm calling you about the gun dealer in Arkansas." And I said, "I'm sorry, I don't know who that is." And he said, "You don't know who he is?" I said, "Name means nothing to me." And he said, "Well, he knows your client." I said, "Tell me a little bit more." So he told me a little bit more. So I said, "Oh, you mean Bob Miller?" He said, "Oh, no." He said, "That's not his name. His name is whatever it was, John Smith." Well, I was satisfied this reporter knew what he was talking about. So I got back in my car, drove down to see Tim. I said, "Why don't you tell me about," and I gave John Smith. He kind of acted surprised, and I said, "Well, let's cut the bullshit. You told me the guy's name was Bob Miller." He said, well, that's the alias he used at gun shows. And I said, Tim, you stayed in this man's house. You knew this man. You corresponded with this man. You knew his girlfriend. He thinks you set up the robbery at his house. You didn't know him as Bob Miller. You knew him as, I've forgotten the man's name, but John Smith. I said, let me tell you the reason you didn't tell me who he is because you didn't want him connected to this case. And as a result, the media has found out about his connection to the case. And they've told me, I didn't hear about this from my client. I heard this from a reporter in Detroit, Michigan. So from that point on, I became increasingly skeptical. And finally, after spending a lot of time and a lot of the taxpayers' money investigating it, I simply could not break the nut, couldn't crack it.